Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 135.
This week on the podcast, the CIA torture report proves that A, we've been in the grasp of a huge sneaking evil for years, and B, Dianne Feinstein has an ounce of fight left in her after all.
Dick Cheney's new heart is only new in the literal sense. His metaphorical heart is just as evil and unfeeling as it always was.
And the new UN climate deal nixes the pledges and opts for the helpful, non-binding suggestions way of dealing with major polluters.
Pig diarrhea is among the many pressing items of national interest that is addressed by the new, amendment-laden House spending bill.
And much of the left is now ready for Warren, and either none or all of the right is ready for Jeb.
The Ferguson and Eric Garner protests are still going strong.
And Angelina Jolie and Amy Pascal share a hug and grimace heard round the world in the Sony leaks aftermath.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hi guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
It's so easy, by the way, that website.
That's the easy.
There's
it's
no
our name.
.orgs, there's no blog spots, there's no anything. I mean, it's like, it could, literally, if you were going to just guess as to what our website was.
That would be it.
You would get it right.
If you tried to go to braintrust.com, it'd be wrong, because there's a weird website there that we don't have.
Don't do, luckily, that's not our name.
It's not our name.
Yeah.
And that's why, by the way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. In any case, this was a great week if you're into reporting the news just for the fun of it. A terrible week if you're an American citizen looking to care about the news at all.
I know.
So we got just like tons of bad news this week.
There were two news stories that were sort of like roundly hated by sort of most all people.
Yeah, well, anyone who's...
It's not what you're looking for.
Anyone who's a person who has a conscience is not trying to get involved in this Senate torture report situation.
No, they're not.
Holy moly. All.
That's why Dick Cheney had no... problems with it, which
no, yeah.
we'll get to
we're,
him in a
we're
while.
We'll get to him in a moment.
He doesn't count as a person with a conscience.
Well, he doesn't count as a person, period, because hardly. As you suggested earlier, he might be undead.
Yes, I did tell
the
you
The man
that
doesn't
earlier.
Have all of his
I was
original
watching
parts.
That Meet the President interview, and I was like, first off, he doesn't look that old. Second off, they played a clip of him from like 1994, where he looked
same
generally
age.
The same, which was the best part of that interview, too. Maybe I'll tell you about that later.
Okay.
But this is me teasing that part of the interview. Don't let me forget. I'll forget, probably.
But you'll definitely anyway. Forget.
So, CIA torture... There was a 500-page report. Actually, it's not even the report.
No,
the 500
this
pages
is the executive
is the
summary.
Executive summary. It's like a 10,000-page
the report.
The report
is a 6,000-page report in real numbers. 10,000 in exaggerated numbers. And it's a report just filled with horrifying revelations about what the CIA was up to while you know while it was using enhanced interrogation techniques to interrogate people that it believed had to do with 9/11 and other terrorists.
Right, that's code for torture, by the
that's
way.
That's code
people.
For torture.
Enhanced
that's what we in the American community are referring to torture as these
right.
days. Enhanced
the,
interrogation.
The rest of all of the world community is referring to it as torture.
Right. Even the English-speaking parts of the world are calling it torture, because that's the English word for what we did.
Right.
The American word is enhanced interrogation.
Yeah. The English word for some of what we did actually was killing people.
That's so murder is the word.
That's another word.
But yeah, no, this report is like terrifically damning.
Yes.
Like... damning, and it describes things that no one really even saw coming, I don't think. It describes like a series of abuses that just went, seems like it went on forever and ever and ever. But also, it involves the CIA sort of like having sort of intentional deceptions with the media and with the administration itself at the time. And then also, the administration wasn't telling, the Bush administration was not telling the rest of the Bush administration what was going on a lot of the time.
Yes.
I mean, we're
going
to talk in a little bit about how they sort of kept Colin Powell out of the loop because they felt he might have too much of a conscience.
They didn't want any of the thinking people to know about what was going on.
No, it was like Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice were running some sort of evil farm,
right.
and they were keeping everyone else out of the loop.
George Bush didn't want to know just because he was too stupid to have the information acknowledged by himself.
Yes, no, he literally didn't want to know. He asked not to know. And we're also going to talk about that. In any case, this was a really bad week to be in the CIA or to be a representative for the CIA.
Well, and I think it's important to note, too, that this was all, you know, none of this report is conjecture. I heard one of the things that Dick Cheney was talking about this morning, and a lot of people who are sort of like condemning this report are saying that no one in the CIA was actually interviewed for this report. And that is, while technically accurate, this was all taken from documents, like internal documents within the CIA. That's how they came to this report. It was, official documents, it was emails, it was sort of reports on the actual enhanced interrogation program. So none of what is in here is just the Democratic senators
also,
making things up.
It was, it's world, all from... has been talking to the CIA and they've been deliberately lying to the world. Like, well, right. The CIA yes. has not been honest about what they've been up to in this with these enhanced interrogation techniques. Yeah. So the fact the world has spoken to them. They, yeah, exactly. The reason we need this report is because right. they were not telling the world what was happening right. in real world right. facts.
Well, and they didn't need the... I mean, honestly, had they talked to the head of the CIA about this, they would have just gotten the same runaround that, you know, yeah, everyone else was getting. That's why they went to official, you know, internal documents.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how they... that was the best way to do it. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't because they were, like, trying to secretly just come up with some, like, Democrat, you know, version of... the events that happened. That's not yeah. not what they were doing.
No, and I mean even John Brennan, who's the CIA director, was he sort of tried to back up this approach by saying that it yielded productive intelligence, which is something the report denies.
Well, that is a thing that they have like always been claiming. I mean, yeah. even just in terms of how they got Osama bin Laden, that was a thing that like that right. movie. What was that movie? Like that was the whole thing where they
not short-term six. Just making up random movies yeah. that it could be about. No,
Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
See, it was a number movie.
And a lot of the Republicans were like, oh, Hollywood's going to be so mad about that because they show the torture, like gaining information, because that's what the official story was for a really long time.
Right. That's not what the real world story was.
That's not the fact-based story.
That's not the story.
That's not what happened.
But Brennan was also forced to sort of concede that there were mistakes made. And he, I think, used the word like, reprehensible or something right. like that to describe
something like went beyond what the program had sort yeah. of envisioned called for or something, you know, like something that like basically that. Yeah
but we're gonna talk a little bit about some of the most damning revelations that this report has. The first was that these torture techniques went far beyond and were used far more widely than anyone has ever admitted to
right.
before. Because they didn't just include waterboarding, which was a source, you know, there was a big national discussion about whether
waterboarding was considered torture.
I think it is. I think we all agreed ultimately that it was.
I think so too.
But that was not the only torture technique that they were using.
No.
And they were
child's play.
That was child's play. They were first of all, they were keeping people in really deplorable conditions.
Like boxes, coffin boxes.
When I say deplorable, I don't mean that they were just sort of like, that, you know, they didn't pass the glove test.
No, they like spent like days at a time, or at least like 24 hours or whatever, in like these boxes that are truly coffin size, like 25 yeah. inches wide,
yeah.
like 25 inches tall. I mean... you know, just
these were sites that didn't have basic, you know.
No, these were the black sites or whatever.
Yeah,
the dark sites, or whatever they were calling them.
Yeah. I don't know. But these are sites that didn't have like basic amenities that you need to like survive.
Right.
And they, on top of that, they were also using sleep deprivation.
Yep.
Where they would have people stay standing for days and not let them sleep. And then also they were using these techniques on people that were injured. So they were denying people medical care for injuries that they did not sustain.
And not mentally stable, too.
And not mentally stable, too, yeah. exactly. But they were denying medical care to people that had been injured previously, before they had been taken in.
Right.
So, like, there was one guy who had a bullet wound, and they just let it fester, and then they continued to waterboard him while he was already kind of going into shock because of this bullet wound. And things like that, they were, like Brent said, they were using these techniques on people that they really couldn't hope to gain anything out of. And then also they were using, this has been much reported, but this rectal rehydration and rectal feeding.
Yeah, well, that's because that's the most scandalous sounding thing.
Exactly. And this is something that they claimed they were only using on people that were sort of like, where it was medically necessary to keep them alive.
Which
turns out not so.
Not the case.
It was just sort of a power game that they played with a bunch of people who, for whom it was not medically necessary.
Right.
And it's a very, it was sort of like, you know, a kind of, it's a power move to be like, you can't control your own, you know, sort of bodily functions, I guess. But, you know, they had hunger strikes. They had things like that.
Yeah.
We know that they had been forcibly feeding people at some of these sites anyway, but they were doing it rectally, which is really unpleasant sounding.
It is.
And it's possibly considered torture.
Yeah.
On top of that, the people that were doing these interrogations were not well trained. In some cases, they were not trained at all. The first few months that they operated this program with the first 25 prisoners, they had no training at all. These were just people that they screened. But the people that they screened included people who had a history of anger issues. They had people with histories of sexual assault. They were not people that were screened to be the most stable of influences. And then they didn't actually, you know, they had been claiming for a long time that they were offering 4 weeks of training to the people that were doing these interrogations. And they didn't start that training program until well after they had started interrogating the first 25 prisoners.
Yeah.
And so that much, like something like a quarter of these interrogations were happening with untrained staff.
Right.
And, you know, they were allowed to use their own judgment during the interrogation. So.
Right. And these are not people who had sound judgment.
No. If you're, oftentimes, if you're someone who's comfortable carrying out torture orders,
right.
you're not one of the more sounder judging
people. Well, right, but also if you're a person who is sexually assaulting someone, you're also not a person who, you know, is
so true.
Sound enough so judgment true. That should have ever been well, allowed into a room where enhanced interrogation techniques are happening.
If you're not trained even in the slightest in how to use these techniques...
Well, you just do anything.
You definitely shouldn't be allowed. Right. I mean, that's...
Like, once you hear rectal feeding is an okay thing to do...
Like what's the limit there? There's no limit.
There's no line.
There's no line. More so, what is sort of damning about this sort of from the intelligence point of view is that it turns out that these torture sessions didn't really yield great evidence. We mentioned this Zero Dark 30 story because that's sort of like one of the big examples of how torture techniques really didn't end up yielding the most useful information that the CIA ended up gaining. You know, they didn't find out where Osama bin Laden was from a person that they had tortured.
Right.
But the report kind of goes to great lengths to debunk the idea that there were great intelligence gains being made, because not only were people giving unreliable information, as you would if you were being tortured,
right.
But apparently the agency was continuing to torture people long after they had been sort of given the information that you could be expected to get out of these prisoners.
Right.
So they were just sort of at a certain point doing it for like the joy of torturing people or, you know, whatever. I mean, they were not torturing people for a reason at a certain point. That was just like part of the program.
Yeah.
And then also they went out of their way to not really let anyone know what the full scope of their activities were. They didn't brief the press about the full scope of their activities, but more so than that, they didn't brief Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, about the full scope of their activities. And basically they sort of, with certain members of the Bush White House, they kind of colluded to leave anyone with a conscience out of the loop. So Colin Powell, who I think was probably one of the least evil members of the Bush administration, was, you know, one of the first people, but they also didn't really even brief Donald Rumsfeld about what was going on.
Well, because, and that was obviously a very, you know, specific effort on all of these people's parts, because even Dick Cheney this morning on Meet the Press, who claims that they all knew about this anyway, but he said that he was getting a 6-day-a-week update about the intelligence that was going on with this program. So
I'm not shocked to hear that Dick Cheney was on top of it.
No, I mean, of course not. But I mean, like, if he was hearing about it 6 days a week at a briefing and no one else was hearing about it, I sort of find that A, hard to believe, but B, also, like, if that is true, then obviously it was a very sort of, like, specifically, you know, like, we must not tell, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't just accidentally not know.
P.S. Dick Cheney was sort of MIA for a lot of that experience, secretly running things anyway. Like, I feel like there was probably a lot of information, if you really, like, dove into that, you know, looking for that kind of thing, that he was not passing on to the rest of the administration.
Oh, probably.
I think he had, like, a secret thing going on.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, obviously he had this secret thing going on, but I think he had other secret things going on, too.
Yeah.
More so than that, the CIA did not brief George Bush about these techniques until April of 2006.
Yeah, they've been going for 4 years
after they started this program.
Yeah.
4 years. He was president for 4 years and didn't realize that we were torturing people at secret black ops sites all over the world. And we're going to talk in a minute about how all over the world those sites were. Because there were more all over the world than you would want those sites to be.
Yeah.
But, and on top of that, they also misrepresented what they were doing to the media and to the, and to members of Congress and things like that, because they were trying to kind of sway public opinion.
Yeah.
Also, there were some like weird petty fights between the FBI and the CIA about who was getting credit for things. And the report also goes into that, which is sort of hilarious. And also typical. The CIA and the FBI hate each other.
Totally.
They're just, they have the same mission ultimately. Like there's no reason for them to hate each other.
No, there is.
But
they
do. They're those people. Yeah. And then the sort of most damning revelations, I think, are that they also sort of accidentally murdered in one case, but also tortured people that were not even enemy combatants.
Like one in four.
One quarter of the, there were 119 known detainees who they interrogated using this method. 26 of those people
were not even
enemy combatants of any sort.
Yeah.
They were just innocent people who got, this is why you don't commit torture, by the way. I mean, other than that it's a terrible idea and you shouldn't do that to anyone.
Yeah.
The other reason, even if you're a person without a conscience, that you don't do it, is because you accidentally torture innocent people, and that's super not okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay to torture anybody. It's really, really, really not okay to torture a random person who just got swept into your nonsense.
No,
this is why we're against the death penalty.
Because
it's not worth murdering an innocent person.
Yeah.
Which we did.
Yeah.
Possibly not. I mean, he was, you know, he wasn't one of the ones who was either, and there was, you know, there was a guy who was, quote, intellectually challenged. There was a guy with mental disability.
Yeah.
There were people who were intelligence sources for us that we tortured using these techniques. In one case, there were two people who the CIA decided were sort of like connected to Al-Qaeda based on some information that was fabricated by some other detainee, and just sort of like tortured them for a while until they checked their messages and found that the CIA was like, no, these are our informants.
Well, this is what I think is so, you know, it makes all of this so terrible. I mean, you can talk about, you know, rectal feeding all you want, because that sort of like sounds scandalous. But I think that this is what, and actually John McCain sort of like made a very good speech about this as a person who was a prisoner of war and who was very against torture. But he basically was like, you know, this goes against everything that America supposedly stands for in the world, that every life has meaning. And it sort of also is just, I think, to say that, you know, we don't Mirandize these people.
Yeah.
We don't, because they're enemy combatants, we take them to these black sites. I mean, it really is sort of like, whether you believe that torture is getting this information or not, it's still, you have to sort of like admit to yourselves that it goes against, it flies against, the, in the face of everything that America claims to stand for, like, in the world. And so, that's why this is so, you know, scandalous, just because I think that it lets the rest of the world be like, well, where do they get off?
Exactly. And the deny, I mean, this agent who was specifically called out for killing one of the combatants was never punished. They said, well, we can't do anything because this is, quote unquote, a business filled with uncertainty, which is not an excuse, because you don't have to murder anyone ever. Nope, that's never needed. That's never required.
No.
So they never even really addressed the shortcomings sort of within their own organization.
Yeah.
And they never called out the people who were taking it too far, which is another problem, because that person got away with murder. Like, that's not what the CIA is supposed to be up to.
No,
at least not, you know, I know that we watch movies all the time where the CIA is like secretly like putting hits out on people or whatever. Like, I get that that's a part of the kind of like lore of the CIA, but this kind of like concerted effort that is like a program where we are torturing people for information smacks of like fucking Pinochet style antics.
Yeah.
It smacks of those dictatorships in the Southern Cone that you hear about and you're like horrified by the disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, in Argentina, they had this problem, too. In Brazil, they had this problem, too. Like, this is what that sounds like.
Yeah.
And that is not okay.
No, I agree.
I realized that we were also involved in those situations.
Yeah.
But those were foreign governments doing that. This is not, this is just the U.S. government doing this explicitly for our own gains.
Right. Well, exactly. And whether you think that, to me, it's sort of like, you know, almost misses the whole point, like, this whole thing. I mean, like, this is obviously, like, very damning. But, like, when you get right down to it, the issue is the fact that we hired some psychiatrists to come in and come up with these ideas that might get some information and then decide legally whether it was going to, like, you know, be against sort of, like, world conventions on, like, the torture stuff that we signed and oftentimes
we
came up with spearheaded in the first place. The fact that we chose to do that, whether we went above and beyond it or not, and whether they, like,
is already problematic.
That's the problem. Like, the program that got started in 2002 or whenever it was, that's the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it really needs to go back to that.
There's no way this program doesn't get abused.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly. That's
once you've admitted to something that is basically sort of torture, even if you don't agree that it fully, you know, is torture, but it sort of is on the way to torture.
Right. You're having to think about it. If you're having to debate it amongst yourselves.
You've greenlit something that you don't
want
to have greenlit.
Yeah.
And really disturbingly, tons of countries were complicit in this.
Yeah.
And some of them have had to publicly sort of acknowledge this already.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, this report, there was actually a big controversy because the intelligence community did not want to name the countries that aided the U.S. in this report because they were afraid there would be repercussions diplomatically. Yeah. And the White House was also very against them doing this. And the Senate staff was like, no, we need to fucking name these people.
Yeah.
So they kind of had this compromise where they like identified them, but like by colors or something. So the Washington Post and a bunch of other news sources like figured out real quick who they were talking about.
Yeah.
And these are countries that either helped by enabling rendition. So they were transferring detainees without due process, or they provided facilities for the U.S. to operate these programs in abroad, things like that, that aided and embedded our program.
Yeah.
But so in any case, a lot of the countries that were involved in Europe have already kind of like publicly apologized and stated some of them have already paid reparations. But John Kerry was very frustrated that this was going to come out as Secretary of State. This does make his job hard. And he asked Dianne Feinstein to not release the names of the report. And she was like, no.
Yeah.
they were going to not identify them at all, and she refused.
Yeah.
So good for her.
Good for her, yeah. Well, and actually, Ron Wyden was on Meet the Press this morning as well, who's a big, he said one of the Democrats who was really sort of like spearheading this along with Diane Feinstein, and he wants the whole, he was like, I lost a lot of battles on redactions, and he was like, I really wanted the whole thing to just, you know, be declassified.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is redacted. So, I mean, there's enough there's obviously to give you a pretty good picture, because we just talked about all of it. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of information that is still not even out there yet, just because, you know, some people chose to, you know, decide that it was too important to be declassified.
This was something that I think the reason that Diane Feinstein decided to release this report as quickly as she did was because she wanted to get it out before the GOP took over office. Because there's a chance that in a few months this would never have come to light.
Right.
And I think, you know, she's someone who's been very strong. You know, she's the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee. She's been very strong on issues like this in the past. So she was someone who really wanted this report to be seen.
Well, and she really wanted it to be seen after she found out that the CIA was spying on her.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. You're right. Yeah. She's not taking shit from anyone.
Don't piss her off, of all people, if you're the CIA. And you know she's working on a report like this.
Well, that's why they were spying on her.
That's why they were spying on her. Yeah, it was. It was. You're right.
But in any case, so the countries that had secret CIA prisons on site, this is according to the Washington Post, they had 4 in Afghanistan, but then they also had them in Poland, Lithuania, Romania, and Thailand.
Yeah.
Not a great list of countries, if I had to say so myself.
No.
There were also countries with proxy prisons, when these were countries where the U.S. would sort of go into foreign prisons and torture people there, which is wonderful of us. That was, and surprising places, by the way, Egypt, Syria, Libya, Pakistan, Jordan, Morocco, Gambia, Somalia, Uzbekistan, Ethiopia, and Djibouti, all countries that, surprising sort of list of countries that were secretly cooperating with us. I would guess Syria is not currently cooperating with us.
Probably not.
But these are countries that at the time were cooperating with us. And then the countries that were enabling renditions is a massive list. It's like a third or a quarter of the world's countries.
Right.
And it includes a lot of Western nations like Germany and Sweden, Italy.
Yeah.
And then includes some countries that we have a long history of difficulties with, including Syria and a lot of the Middle East. Those are all countries that were aiding and abetting us in this, in terms of renditions. And that includes also like being transit points for flights for these prisoners and things like that. Like, it is a really concerningly long list of places that were, so like most of the world was sort of complicit in this with us, which is even more disturbing.
Yeah.
Because now we have to deal with that. I don't even know. I mean, it's self-explanatory why it's disturbing. I can't put it into words, but you know, you already know.
You do.
But this Cheney interview on Meet the Press this morning was sort of like the icing on the cake of terribleness
that
has been going around.
And I mean, he's obviously has no remorse at all.
No.
I mean, he doesn't have human emotion. So remorse, he couldn't have it. I mean, he can't process that
here
at
are
all.
Some real fact quotes from Dick Cheney in this interview.
Mm-hmm.
Read this program. It worked. It absolutely did work.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I'd do it again in a minute.
Oh, yes. Well, it was fun.
He's not sorry, and he had fun.
Give him something to look forward to every day.
That's right.
Hearing about how the torture was going.
Rectal feedings are one of his favorite topics of conversation.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he insisted that those were done for medical reasons only.
And the report, Chuck Todd was like,
says the exact opposite.
Wrong.
P.S. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you can't just pretend facts don't exist. That's his favorite thing to do, but you can't.
Yeah.
But he also, like, just literally showed no remorse for what had happened, including when people described prisoners who had been innocent, who had been given this treatment.
Right.
Had no problem with that. Then says that what does disturb him every day, the thing that really gets his goat, is that we released Guantanamo prisoners and prisoners from other prisons in Iraq and things like that, who've returned to the battlefield. So he's still harping away on, like, prisoners that they released who returned to the battlefield. P.S. I would return to the fucking battlefield if I had been held in Guantanamo and tortured.
Yeah.
So he's more concerned about that. He literally said, I'm more concerned with bad guys who got out and released, than I am with the few that, in fact, were innocent.
Yeah. Well, and he
kept... What kind of human being is he? Not one.
Terrible one.
An undead
one. Well, and he also kept going back because Chuck Todd, I think, you know, I think the point that have been anybody who's still claiming that this is okay, I think the question to them then is, where is the line? Because we, as a nation, have signed on to worldwide, you know, protocols that say that we're not going to do this. So where do you draw the line? And Chuck Todd kept asking him where you draw the line. And his response, or he kept saying, what is torture? Like, if you think all of this was fine, like, then what is torture? And he said it like a couple times and he was like, well, being one of 19 people who flew two planes into the World Trade Center, like, those 3,000 people who died, they were tortured.
That, oh, he's, so like, obsessed with 9/11.
The only thing that he would claim was torture was the people who were killed in the World Trade Center, which, I mean, I'll go with you on that, that they were tortured. They right. were killed by terrorists.
No, they
but, I
were,
mean, like that,
they were
that can't
murdered.
Be your, that can't be your definition of terror.
They were not
like, of,
tortured.
No, of course.
They
no,
were
right.
murdered. That right, is a murdered. Different thing entirely.
Yeah.
And then he also
said
he was asked
times.
About the errors in the program and said, I have no problem as long as we achieved our objective.
Yeah, he didn't
He doesn't
care.
Have a line.
Yeah.
And then later, first of all, the UN has someone who's called the UN Special Rapporteur on Counterterrorism and
Sounds
Human Rights.
Fancy.
Sounds very fancy, or French or something.
Yeah.
That person has called for the Bush administration officials who were behind this to be prosecuted, as many of us have called for years,
yeah.
in fact. And Cheney totally dismisses this and says, I have little respect for the United Nations or for this individual who doesn't have a clue. He doesn't respect the United Nations.
Yeah.
He's a person who doesn't care about the United... Like, that's... crazy statement for
yeah.
a former vice president.
Right.
That's a radical thing to say. We were instrumental in founding the United Nations.
Right.
That's one of our legacies.
Yeah.
That's.
But this,
we're
I think,
on the fucking Security Council.
And I think like, I think what he is saying here, and also what this report, you know, sort of I think should make people think, and I don't think that it will because Obama has already said that he's not going to prosecute these people, but. I mean, obviously hate George Bush and Dick Cheney just because politically,
right.
I mean, and also because of this, but I think to not prosecute them is a terrible precedent.
That's a really bad precedent.
Because when you have people who supposedly know that this program is going on and these are basically war crimes
and
as
these
stated
are illegal,
by every convention
yeah.
that we have signed onto throughout, you know, our
time
as a country. How do you not and then say that that's okay?
Like, you can't, like, it doesn't do us any favors to pretend like the Bush administration was above the law.
No.
And they acted above the law the entire time that they were in office.
Yeah.
And that was something we said all the time when they were in office. I mean, not on this podcast, as we were
no.
not in existence.
Right.
But in lifetime, that was something that was said a lot. When they were in office,
yeah.
was that they were committing war crimes. We didn't
right.
even know the extent
We
of
didn't
it.
Know this. We just thought they were
the
committing war crimes
because
they were lying about the weapons of mass destruction.
Exactly.
We didn't even
that,
have any
they
earthly idea this was going
were
on.
Committing war crimes. But
right.
this is like full... These are like war crimes as said by... This is not just like coming up with a fake reason to invade a country.
Right.
These are war crimes as very specifically stated by many international conventions
right.
that we have helped spearhead. That
yeah.
we, you know, and that were designed to help rid us of dictatorships that were using these types of, you know, processes, that's like, it's
sure.
not a process, using these tactics. To you know, get information out of people
yeah.
and or just be annoying and terrible. But I mean, this is like so far over the line of things that you can justify away by being like, well, they were a little evil. Oh, well,
yeah.
like that's what I think is so disturbing about this report.
Yeah.
Is it really like, this is not who we want to be.
It's not.
And we didn't already want to be these people. Like, we didn't want to be the Bush administration.
We sure
That's
didn't.
How we ended up with Obama.
Yeah.
Is people didn't want to be the country of the Bush administration
yeah.
anymore. And that was understandable.
Yeah.
But
oh,
we
oh,
don't
sorry.
Want to be these.
No, we don't.
These people.
Really quickly.
Yes.
Speaking of, we sort of mentioned Iraq and weapons of mass destruction and them going in there.
Yes.
Whatever. Anyway, going back to my teaser from the...
1994.
Dick Cheney. Being interviewed on C-SPAN, asked about... like the first Gulf War, because I think wasn't he the Secretary of Defense or something? He was in
yeah.
with the first Bush, whatever.
Yeah, he was a foot,
and he
a Bushy,
was sort
through
of,
and through.
Was asked why Osama bin Laden was not taken out in the first Gulf War, other
yeah.
than, you know, like, I mean, fully toppled or whatever.
Right.
And he basically went, very eloquently explained the situation that we are now in after having toppled Saddam when he was... You know,
Whoa.
In office, like, literally was like, well, the whole country could become destabilized and the Kurds could have like a real situation in Turkey and Syria is obviously going to want to have, like, you know, like, literally just like was able to foresee 20 years in advance from what he caused when he was,
right.
you know, the vice president that he apparently
knew
was a bad idea in 1994. And Chuck Todd played that for him and he was like, so what's the question?
How is he so... evil.
I know.
How does he do it? How do you do it? How do you be
know.
That person?
I don't know.
It's like he does not give a fuck.
No, he doesn't.
And it is a dangerous amount of non-fuckery
no
that he like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like he just blew that. And this is what I think was always sort of going through my head during the Bush administration is they would do things that were so outrageous. I use this example all the time. where I had this friend once in college who asked me for a ride to the doctor at like 6 a.m. one morning. And I was like so flabbergasted that someone would dare ask that in college, by the way. We all slept till like noon.
Yeah, of course.
That I said yes because I didn't know what to do. Like, how do you say no to a ridiculous request?
Yeah.
It was so ridiculous that I just got caught off guard and I had to say yes. And I felt like the entire time the Bush administration was in office, they were doing things that were so ridiculous that Americans just had to say yes because we were so like,
we didn't know what to do. Right.
Like, how do you react to someone that crazy?
Yeah.
You just say yes because you just roll over because there's no way to fight crazy.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way to fight that kind of crazy with logic and reason.
No.
They're just, they've sort of usurped the conversation out from under you.
Yeah.
Because you can't use normal conversation tactics to talk them down.
Right. So true.
That's what was happening with them. In any case, it still blows my mind.
8 years
later.
Yeah.
8 years of that we had.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, there was a climate summit in Lima this weekend that went as poorly as you might expect it did.
Even though the U.S. just had a big deal
we had
with China.
This big deal with China, and everyone was sort of hoping that the momentum would kind of last. But China was actually really instrumental in shutting down a lot of the good things that they were trying to get done in this conference, because China's not trying to have any of this.
No.
Because China's one of the biggest polluters in the world, so they're not trying to get involved in this. There's also, there's sort of like a weird issue, a lot, and this happens all the time at these climate summits, but where smaller nations, especially smaller developing nations, end up sort of like, they get angry with the big industrialized nations because they're the ones doing all the polluting. And essentially what ends up happening is it destabilizes the climate in such a way that these small, poor nations end up paying for all of it.
Right.
They're the ones with the stupid earthquakes that, you know,
they're
the Hades of the world.
Right, and they're not
and
the big polluters.
The U.S. is sort of, if we had an earthquake, we'd just be like, we'll clean up the earthquake. It wouldn't be like everyone died in the whole country.
Right.
Meanwhile, Haiti is having the whole country dies every time they have an earthquake, and they don't even have the industry that we get to have that makes life comfortable in between earthquakes.
Right.
You know? So, in any case, there was a deal that was reached that was very minor. They're going to meet again in Paris soon. But, like, it got, the draft that got approved, it got watered down. Notable about it was that they, you know, they have these pledges so that nations will pledge to, like, cut their emissions, blah, blah, blah. And usually they say, shall, and instead this time they said may.
Right.
We're allowed to cut our carbon emissions.
Yeah.
We're not making it illegal to cut your carbon emissions.
Right. We may do it. Yeah.
We don't know. We're not sure.
Yeah.
So that was annoying. In any case, domestically.
This was, I think, my favorite story of the
week.
Favorite, right.
The other one was my story that I obsessively read about.
You had to leave
it
with
was
that one.
Horrifying.
Yeah, it was.
This
was
ridiculous.
Yeah. We have a spending bill that is going to fund the government through the end of September, which I guess we can applaud. I don't know, right? We didn't have a government shutdown. Everything on Earth was being done to not have a government shutdown again.
They're not trying
to
get involved in that
last time. Right.
In this beginning of election season.
We barely missed it. A lot of people tried to get it shut down on both sides of the aisle,
People were going at it.
But anyway, the big sort of sticking point. So it passed over the weekend, which was another sticking point, which
we'll
get to in a little
bit
because that was dramatic. But it's a $1.1 trillion spending bill. It passed the Senate 56-40, and it was sort of an interesting group of no votes because it had no votes from both sides for various...
Well, it had so many amendments to it.
Well, right.
And so many little things.
Right. What happens in a lot of these votes like this, because everybody was sort of like obviously declared that this was like a... They were considering this like a must-pass bill.
Right.
So whenever you have a must-pass bill, that's the best time to get in all the shenanigans.
Dumb pork spending or dumb... What the Republicans do is dumb anti-pork spending.
Right.
Where they, they defund things in these little amendments.
Yeah, because they figure that it has to get passed, so everyone will just sort of like live with whatever it ends up in it. So that's what happened. But basically, the reason that the Republicans were sort of at least initially thinking that they didn't want to pass it is because all the Republicans were insistent that they wanted to defund the Department of Homeland Security, which is so they could defund Obama's immigration thing that he just did, his executive order, basically.
They want to throw the baby out with the bathwater so hard.
Exactly. So Boehner sort of like cut a deal with like the loonies in his caucus to where he would fund the government through September, but he would only fund the DHS until February when the new Congress was installed, and then they would be able to like go at the immigration situation in February.
So they have shot themselves in the foot like a bunch of loonies because their immigration plan is not popular, and now they're going to have to talk about it in February, right when everyone's declaring that they're going to run for president, and that's going to be unfun for everyone involved.
Yeah, it is.
It will be fun for us.
It'll be fun for us, right? Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to be unfun for everyone involved.
Yeah. So anyway, it it barely made it out of the house earlier this week. And it was 219 to 206. And the Senate finally got around to passing it this weekend after it was supposed to, it was supposed to pass on Monday, but Ted Cruz insisted that everyone stay over the weekend, which actually ended up biting him in the ass.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's now passed.
It's passed. Obama signed it Saturday night.
He's signed it Saturday
night. So here's what's in it.
Yeah. There's some real
things,
doozies in it. Some of them are ridiculous and some of them are actual terrible things.
You can be thrilled to know that we're cutting funding to the death panels.
Ah, yes.
And if by death panels you thought we meant real death panels,
where people are deciding who dies,
that's wrong.
That's not it, because that is not a thing that exists.
No. We've cut funding to the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is the ACA's board that sort of decides like what things get covered under the ACA, basically.
Sure.
Like it's an advisory council for the ACA.
Yeah, of course.
It's
every health insurance company previously had one of these before.
Exactly.
And nobody was mad at them for it. But
not a single person. Yeah. I'm on a similar advisory board for the 9/11 health bill.
Sure.
This is a thing that bills are having.
Yeah.
Advisory boards.
Yeah. You haven't killed anybody yet.
I haven't killed anybody yet.
No.
We also made some very damaging changes to campaign finance laws.
This is one of the sticking points that, you know, we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about some of the Democrats who sort of like really came out against this hardcore. And this was one of the main things in addition to something else that we'll get to in a second.
This changes. So McCain-Feingold, which was the 2002 campaign finance reform overhaul, had limits on how much you could donate to the party itself.
Right.
You know, there's limits to candidates, to how much you can donate to candidates, things like that. But there were limits to how much you could donate to the party itself. And this basically like makes like go like those limits are now like 10 times higher than they used to.
No, literally, yeah.
You used to be able to
give $32,400 and they upped it by
$291,600. Oh my God.
Wow. I knew I was bad at math, but I always thought that I could read numbers. Jesus. Anyway, $291,600.
Here's what you can do now. You can donate $324,000 to the DNC or the RNC.
Which is exactly 10 times more than $32,000.
It's literally 10 times the current limit.
Right. That math, I've got on lock.
This is annoying that they went through the trouble of adding.
Telling me what to add.
Like, just tell me what the new number is.
You can now do 10 times more.
Yeah. That's easy.
That's the math.
Yeah, that's the kind of math I can get behind.
Yeah.
So in any case, that's very troubling.
Yeah.
Because we already, as you know, have issues with campaign financing being sort of unlimited via super PACs. And we at least had limits on what you could donate on the like straight ahead political level.
Yeah.
And now that's fake too. So
it's a
disaster. We also, surprising increase in a budget.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ebola, the CDC got some new money.
Yeah, there were a few weird increases because there was this, and I think the NIH got some more money and stuff, and I think that was probably Ebola related.
This is all Ebola related. I say that without any facts to back me up. But what else could
accurate.
It have been? They weren't just like trying to give money to the CDC. They don't like the CDC either.
No.
In terms of the EPA and the environment, the EPA is now going to be kept from applying the Clean Water Act to certain farm ponds. This is a thing that they like to do, where they will like have legislation that is ostensibly to protect certain types of, you know, environments from certain types of pollution.
But then they don't
apply it to any of the situations where it would be effective.
Right, exactly.
So you can just sort of like apply EPA standards to like random things that have no environmental issues.
Like the
then if there's a coal company that's operating on a river, mysteriously that like doesn't have to meet EPA standards.
If the Clean Water Act can't be applied to places that have dirty water, then that's a problem.
Farm ponds are places that have dirty water.
That's not water that you want to drink. So once the Clean Water Act doesn't have anything to do with that, what's the Clean Water Act up to?
Nothing. Not a thing.
It's not doing anything.
It's like a sort of innocuously named bill. It's like the Happy Farms and Unicorns bill.
It's like calling something the Clean Coal bill.
Exactly.
You can't have that.
Can't have it. We're going to talk a little bit about Liz Warren's reaction to this specific thing, but there were some changes to Dodd-Frank.
Yes.
And that has to do with boring things that banks are up to and with the derivative market.
Derivatives trading, which I don't know what they are. We are not here to try and explain it to you.
It's legalized gambling.
Right, exactly. You have heard the words derivative trading.
Yeah.
And the reason that you have heard those words is because
they caused the crash.
Because they caused the crash.
Yeah.
You don't have to know what they mean. You just have to only know that you recognize those words as words that caused having to bail out the banks in the first
place. What happened was, so derivatives are basically like banks trading on the activity of other things.
Right.
And the Dodd-Frank required that banks like get rid of some of those derivative trading arms so that they weren't like trading against, you know, banks had been trading sort of against their own interests in an effort to kind of keep the scales even for them, yeah. and it crashed the market.
Yeah.
And so they were going to require these banks to start doing this derivative trading from non, you know, bank entities.
Right. Only through money that was like protected by the FDIC. Right. Right?
They were going to basically make them push them out to places that were not protected by the FDIC.
Oh, I got
you.
So like the
derivative market was going to be not insured, which is good because the derivative market is legalized gambling. Right. So like fuck the derivative market. Like go screw yourselves. So that was going to have to actually become real gambling. Because part of the issue is that we had insured all of this bullshit.
The gambling.
And so all that gambling we paid for. Yeah. But so in any case, Elizabeth Warren got super pissed about this.
Buddy, did she ever? Well, of course, I mean, she should have. We're gonna talk about it in a little bit. But I mean, like, you know, Jamie Dimon of JPMorgan Chase was whipping up votes on this.
He was lobbying
himself.
For this himself.
Like, don't vote on something. I mean, don't put it in the bill. I sort of understand the pressure on some level to fund the government. But like, this is not like...
Yeah, don't allow this to go into the bill.
You can't do that.
Sneak this into a bill like this. This is a very important issue, as we learned in 2008. This is too important
to be debated.
To be up with the CDC increases and the EPA not applying Clean Water Acts to farms.
And whether we're going to give money to pig diarrhea. Cattle that have has been eaten by wolves, which is another thing that got put
in this does not go in this bill.
Yeah.
There was a 1% increase for federal workers.
Yeah, fine.
Not keeping up with inflation.
Right.
The EPA lost other funding.
Which... Right, and the Republicans were really proud to announce after this passed that in the past, since 2010, the EPA's budget has been cut by 22%.
We're a great nation. Real great. Yes. Mm-hmm. There were some changes to their policy in terms of transferring prisoners to and from Guantanamo Bay.
Right, that's another thing that they always put in these things that basically like keeps Guantanamo Bay open, like because you can't transfer anybody from there.
Right, they can't leave Guantanamo, so we're just stuck with people at Guantanamo there. No due process and are just sitting there. hilariously, the IRS, which not surprisingly, got their budget slashed by $300 million. This is a real rookie move. Because the IRS are not only the people that collect your taxes, they're the people that send you your refund.
Yeah.
Cutting the IRS budget just slows down your refund getting to you and does nothing else of any note.
Yeah.
There is nothing else possible that you could see as a benefit of this other than not getting your refund in a timely manner.
Yeah.
How does that help anyone?
No one.
Doesn't help a single person.
No, it doesn't.
It's a waste.
That's annoying.
Poor Joe Biden's not going to get a raise this year. Poor Joe.
VP pay freeze.
It hilariously bans taxpayers from funding official portraits.
Right. You got to raise that money yourself.
Here's a question that I have for everyone. Can people now just use candid photos in official capacities?
Yeah.
Like,
you don't have to have a portrait painted of yourself.
If we're not going to pay for your portrait, do you have to look official in any capacity, like anywhere?
Or you could take a picture and you could run it through some sort of filter that makes it look like a painting.
That's right.
Right? That's
what you should do. But I mean,
I know those exist.
At a certain point, like... is this like they're not going to have picture day there anymore? Or is it also that they're not going to have painting portraits?
Yeah, we used to have those portraits, presumably so we could remember what these people look like.
For posterity.
Right. We don't need that anymore. We know what all these people look like.
So like, it's a hilarious thing that they even bothered talking about.
Yeah, it's dumb. Which is the Women, Infant, and Children's program, which is provides food aid to low-income families. That got a $93 million cut from last year. But...
Oddly.
They are now going to be required that they ensure that all varieties of fresh vegetables, including white potatoes, are eligible for purchase through
the
program.
White potatoes.
It was a big win for the potato lobby, apparently. Because
white potatoes got a special shout-out.
Right. Because they weren't... And I feel like we talked about this at one point, like, about how, like, the potato people were, like, mad that they weren't included.
I think
like,
last week or 2 weeks ago.
A while ago. Recently. Because, like, they're not listed with sort of, like, the fresh... vegetables, which I mean, I sort of get, but also like, you know, whatever, it's relevant. It's like, I mean, come on. Like that's a thing that we needed to, you know,
also,
discuss.
This is like some potato famine style, like,
totally.
Fresh vegetables, but let's really talk about potatoes.
I know.
The least nutritious vegetable out there.
And speaking of nutrition, Michelle Obama's school lunch program got basically gutted.
We don't care if children eat lunch.
Yeah.
Screw children.
Yeah.
They're only the future. We have a million.
I sort of mentioned this earlier.
Yeah, we have $1 million in there to compensate farmers who lost their livestock to wolves.
Yes, and then finally $2 million.
Thank God we have this
to address the porcine.
I
don't know.
I'm from Iowa.
I forgot. The pig epidemic diarrhea virus.
Yeah,
which is like this virus that's been ravaging the country's hog herd, as the article that I read
from
the Des Moines Register, by the way.
We're finally going to be.
The hog herd is thinning.
With the pig diarrhea epidemic.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah. So anyway, we mentioned that Elizabeth Warren was pissed off about this. She was doing sort of like a very Ted Cruzian situation this week where like
kidding.
She was not kidding, and I was applauding her for it because she was really railing against this. But, like, she was doing that thing where we actually really got on his case for doing it because we were like, what the fuck is he doing whipping up house votes? She was doing the same thing. But, hey, you know, we've been wanting our own tea party for a long time. No. So, like, I feel like this is the biggest step that we've taken toward so that true. In the first place. But she had, like, a press conference earlier in the week with, like, the lefties from the House, like, talking about, like, why this thing was terrible. And it was mostly to do with the Dodd-Frank situation.
It was about the derivatives.
Right.
The changes to Dodd-Frank. Yeah. She was, I think, just, like, so... She's the only person who understands this in either house, basically.
Well, that's the thing.
She's the only person who talks about
this. This is her thing.
This is her thing. It's an issue that she is uniquely able to describe in real terms to people who, like, don't understand the derivatives market.
This is why she is
a
United States
senator. This is why she's a senator. This is why people are talking about her being president. And she was pissed.
Right.
She was not kidding around.
Right. She had, like, one of the most amazing speeches when they were debating this in the Senate, because she said... Oh, where is it? Oh, here's a quote. She said, you know, there's a lot of talk lately about how Dodd-Frank isn't perfect. There is a lot of talk coming from Citigroup about how Dodd-Frank isn't perfect. So let me say this to anyone who is listening at Citibank. And then she, like, literally, like, just addressed Citibank specifically. And she said, I agree with you. Dodd-Frank isn't perfect. It should have broken you into pieces.
Yeah.
And then she dropped her mic and she walked off stage. No, she didn't. But that's what she should have done.
That's what she basically did by making that comment.
Epic. Yeah. I mean, it was so good. Yeah.
This is something that she, I think, also uniquely understands how terrible and unfair it is.
Yeah.
And exactly. No one else knows what the derivatives market is, so it's hard for anyone to know what's going on.
Right.
So boring that you just don't want to hear about it.
Right. You just have to take her word on it.
Yes.
That's what you have to do.
Well, now that once I found out what the derivatives market was, I was already horrified.
Right.
It just took knowing it existed for me to be horrified. Yeah. So the fact that it's not in any way differentiated from the rest of the market, and also more importantly, that we had been insuring those investments,
right,
like, really blows my mind.
Well, and the thing that is so interesting about this to me is that I understand that, like, you know, the Republicans wanted to be, you know, to do this to be sort of, like, friendly to these big banks because they sort of, that's their deal.
It's their MO.
But the other thing that Republicans hate more than just about anything, or claim to hate anyway, is bailouts.
Yeah.
And this only assures that we are going to have another bailout.
Yeah.
And this is why I think that, and you and I have talked about this a lot, why she can appeal to those people on the far right. Because the person that she tried to get this out of there with, like, where she wrote an amendment
to
strip this out of, was David Vitter.
Yeah.
Who is a wingnut lunatic Republican.
Yeah.
I mean, that was who she was in bed with on trying to get this taken out of there. And it's because he doesn't want to have to bail the banks out again.
No.
So why anybody voted for this is beyond me. Democrats should hate it because it's terrible. Republicans should hate it because they don't want to have to bail out the banks again. It's bonkers.
It's bonkers.
It's really one of the craziest things.
Bonkers.
To try and make sense of it, you really have to, it's a brain bend.
It's a brain bend.
I don't know how to do it.
You would have to pretzelize your brain.
Yeah.
Which.
So it's a real head scratcher, but she was doing the Lord's work this week. On that.
Meanwhile, Ted Cruz, another famous House vote whipper-upper.
Right. Yeah. He got involved this week because I think he saw I think he got really excited about the chance of another government shutdown.
I know. He loves a good government shutdown. He's not afraid.
He almost got it done, too.
Yeah. Instead, he shot himself in his own foot.
And the whole party's foot. Yeah.
Because he basically insisted that they show up this weekend thinking that it was going to basically lead to another shutdown, accomplish this.
Yeah,
you know.
I don't know. There were a lot of, in this story, there are a couple examples of, like, procedural tricks that I don't, you know, pretend to
his
understand.
His plan was to defund Obama's executive order on immigration.
Right. And what
that was his MO.
Right. And what had happened was that Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell had agreed to a vote on this on Monday. Like, Friday, they, like, because the funding was out on Friday, I think, or Saturday or something. So they, like, passed, like, a two-day funding bill.
Right.
And they were like, we're just going to vote on this on Monday. It'll be fine. Ted Cruz was insistent on making everybody come in and vote on defunding immigration, like you said.
Right.
But unfortunately, what happened through some other sort of, procedural trick.
The Senate has a lot of procedural tricks,
by
the way.
By making them come back in on the weekend, Harry Reid was able to sort of, like, schedule some votes that I think they weren't apparently going to get to because they weren't going to be on the calendar or whatever. And they are votes on a lot of Obama nominees that the Republicans have been blocking, and they've been trying to block till the new Congress comes in place, including like Vivek Murthy, who is the Surgeon General
person who we thought was never going to get
right. And and let us remind you that the only reason the Republicans are not voting on that is because the NRA got furious because he linked gun violence to public health.
Yeah.
So he's going to get a vote. A lot of people who the Republicans didn't want to get a vote are going to get a vote because Ted Cruz made people
show up on Saturday to vote on defunding the immigration executive order.
When you think about this, you pretty much have to agree that probably all of the Republicans at least secretly agree with Ted Cruz on this.
Sure.
So the fact that his amendment to vote on this lost 74 to 22. I mean, people from his own party
were just like, fuck you.
Were voting no, just literally to tell him to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
And Orrin Hatch basically said it aloud. I mean, he said you should have an end goal in sight if you're going to do these types of things. And I don't see an end goal other than irritating people.
Here's one thing that people in the Senate don't like to do. It's show up to work.
Well, obviously.
They love a good vacation in the Senate.
And certainly not if showing up to work is going to, like, you know, fuck you later.
Yeah, it's going to result in some annoying procedural trick that ends up making you vote on all these things that you didn't want to go on the record on.
Yeah.
Like, that's not their plan. Not only did they have to vote on all these people they didn't want to vote for, they had to come in on a weekend right before the holidays to do that. They were trying to not work for the rest of the year, guys. That is what their plan was.
They literally
For the last few years, they have had to show up every day of the fucking holidays because someone has had some dumb government shutdown plan that has kept them working through the holidays. They wanted to go home.
They did. Yeah.
This is doubly bad.
And they passed a two-day spending bill just to not have to come in.
Right. I mean. They wanted their weekends too. Like, come on.
Who doesn't?
Unions. They brought us the weekend.
That's right.
These people wanted the weekends that were brought to us by the unions.
That's right.
In any case, interesting 2016 news.
Yeah, back to Liz Warren real quick.
Back to Liz Warren, who we could probably just do the podcast about from now on forever.
We might want to.
We might end up doing that. Liz Warren, well, apparently MoveOn.org has decided that they want to force her into the race.
Yeah, well, I got their email and I signed the thing. I did the little pledge.
That's the right move.
I know, obviously.
It's the right move to want to sign a pledge.
I'm
willing to sign any pledge that involves Liz Warren becoming the president.
I agree.
If I could pledge her into office right now, I would just go for it.
If I could pledge her to queen, I'd do that.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? World queen. I don't care.
Yeah.
King. Who cares?
Doesn't matter.
In any case, MoveOn said that they're prepared to spend $1 million to just try to convince her to get into
the race. That's it. Just $1 million just to talk her into it.
Just to talk her into it. They're opening offices in Iowa and New Hampshire, and they're airing TV ads in both of those states. And they started a website called Run Warren Run, so people can sign this petition that Brent's talking about. And they basically are doing this just to show that people are behind her, which their people are.
Right.
And all people should be.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I think if she stepped in, everyone would end up being behind her.
Well, that's
because she's just so awesome.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
What can you say?
Not enough of the people know yet.
She's, though, like someone who's so good at letting people know. Like, Hillary Clinton's not good at letting people know that she's great because she's terrible.
Well, right.
So she's just known because we know her name already. Right. Liz Warren is someone who, like, once you hear about her, you immediately love her.
Well, right. And she can't ever say anything stupid because she's never had a stupid thought.
Exactly. It's never happened once.
She's perfect.
And also, there were 300 former Obama staffers that penned an open letter to her urging her to run.
Yeah.
Which was organized by the Ready for Warren people, who are now getting some competition from MoveOn in terms of being super excited and who's more excited about Liz Warren potentially running for president.
If they want to fight about who's more excited about that, then God bless them.
ready for that fight.
Yeah.
That's a great fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is, I think that in looking at the field, the left has sort of realized that there's really only one option here.
Yeah. Well, and this is, and I was telling you about this earlier today too, because you and I have been saying this forever, because I think so many people have sort of like just decided upon Hillary Clinton. Now, with all of what was going on this week with the spending bill, they were talking on Meet the Press this morning, and Chuck Todd said to David Axelrod, who was on the panel, he said, can the Democrats reconcile the Hillary Clinton wing of the party and the Elizabeth Warren wing of the party? I was, as you were, happy that she has her own wing.
Yes.
Now. And David Axelrod said, yes, if Hillary Clinton can run on a more populist economic message. And Andrea Mitchell, who was sitting right next to him, looked at him like he was headless and said, she will have to run against everything she stood for the last two decades.
Yeah.
Which is the point that you and I have been trying to make for years, by the way.
She can't stand for the things that people need her to stand for
because she doesn't.
Those aren't her things.
They're not
her platform. Never has been. Never once.
In fact, many of them are the opposite of her things.
Yeah.
She probably loved this Dodd-Frank shenanigan
she
business.
She wants the market to be as free as it can possibly be for big banks.
She probably talks to Jamie Dimon.
Just on the phone to casual, yeah.
Probably texting.
Yeah.
Just pictures of her texting, probably to Jamie Dimon.
Sending him pictures of her cat doing funny things. Things like that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, she's in bed with these Wall Street people like something fierce.
Yeah. It's her thing.
It's her thing. She is known for that.
And for a while, that was a thing that people had a taste for.
Exactly.
It's just not right now.
It's not right now. They had a taste for it at the time that Bill Clinton was president.
Yeah.
And it worked out well for them because they were remembered as being a successful presidency, the two of them.
Right.
And everyone was happy. And then we had Bush and we felt sad. And then we looked back fondly on the days of Clinton. But during the actual Clinton days, I was not so thrilled with the Clinton administration. I think a lot of the things that Democrats are frustrated with the Obama administration are elements of the platform that came from the Clinton wing of the party.
From the Clinton administration that he's trying to rerun again.
Exactly.
I totally agree. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is just like, of course everyone's excited about Liz Warren. She's like
obviously
saying the things that Democrats actually believe instead of the things that we've resigned ourselves to because we've only had Clintons running the party for the last million decades.
That's it.
That's, I said it. In any case, speaking of old names that might throw their name into the hat, people are thinking Jeb Bush is about to declare.
That's happening. Yeah. Totally happening.
He is probably going to declare, I think, in the next month or so. Here's how we know this. First of all, he's been emailing Republican donors asking them to, quote, keep their powder dry. The fuck does that mean? Is it about cocaine, too? Because that's something that I immediately thought about.
Yeah.
Is that like is that something like chummy old boys schools people?
I'm going to need all of your cocaine to get through a primary.
Exactly.
Right? Is that what that means?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. He also, people that work with him are asking bundlers to not commit to Chris Christie or other potential people.
Because they're sort of like the most same genre of person that is
so weird
that is potentially running in 2016.
Like, why
not
those
temperament, but I think just sort of
no,
like
not in temperament
of
no,
a
but in
sort
politically
of at least claimed moderacy.
Yeah,
kind of. I mean, they're your crowd if you're looking
yeah,
for that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then his top strategist Mike Murphy has been telling potential staffers not to sign up for other candidates and to expect his announcement soon. That's
right.
Really how we know.
Yeah.
The rest of these things are just casual things that we learned.
Sure.
What we know is that Mike Murphy is telling people that he's going to run for president.
Right.
And that's what we
yeah
know.
Yeah.
So, and I think he's trying to jump in, I think, before, you know, all of the big donors and staff get wooed away by other campaigns.
Probably.
And then he's also, apparently, his family is now on board. At first, Babs was not having any of it.
Right.
And I think the rest of his family was sort of not super.
Yeah, didn't she say something hilarious where it was like, we don't need another Bush in the White
yeah
House or something,
something like that?
Like,
yeah, she was over it.
Yeah, from a woman whose last name is Bush.
Yeah, no, and who is the evil power behind the Bush family.
Right.
It's Barbara, by the way,
she's
that is the
it
Dick Cheney of the Bush family.
Total.
You know? So, in any case, he's also lost some weight and is working with a personal trainer and
yes
things like that. So he's looking good.
Nice.
And then he's also been talking to strategists about what to do about the fact that he supports immigration reform and Common Core, which are two things that the conservative wing of the party is having none of.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, and especially in Iowa, that's going to be a discussion.
That's hard. He's got it. You know, who was it that said something like, we have to lose the primary to win the presidency or something like that?
Yeah.
So some Republican was quoted as saying that recently, and that sort of is like the thing. Like, you know, I mean, if they want to win, they really sort of like have to pick someone who in their heart they're not happy with. Because
exactly
if they pick who they really want, then they've sort of like doomed themselves yet again.
Yeah.
And so,
especially,
you know, granted,
in
Jeb Bush I think has a problem, an unfortunate problem, just as, you know, a person who I oftentimes have sort of, you know, sad feelings for Jeb Bush, just
I
because I think he was supposed to be the brother that was president. I don't want him to be the president, but like, he obviously would have been a better one, and he just sort of like got the raw deal
yeah
here, basically.
No, he did.
Still don't want him to be president by any stretch of the imagination, but the fact that he now can't be, and I do truly think that he can't be,
yeah,
is... It's sad for
it's
him.
Sad for him.
Yeah.
He
just
was
on
supposed,
a personal level.
He's the most like his father, I think, and he was supposed to be the one
yeah
that got the great successes in politics.
Yeah.
George is a fuck up.
Yeah.
Everyone knew it.
Well,
there,
both of them, I think, have sort of, I mean, one was a one term, and one is going to go down in
no,
the history as one of the worst.
The two Bushes that we've served so far, what we've had so far, have been total fuck ups.
Yeah, abject failures.
George Jr. was a fuck up kid who was not supposed to
be the president
of the United States.
Right.
He got the right education because that's what you do for your kids when you're a Bush.
Yeah.
But Jeb was supposed to be the one who ran for president. Everybody knows that.
Everybody
Poor
knows.
Jeb got stuck with his dumb brother being a dummy in the White House for 8 years.
Yep.
And then he had to deal with all of that. And now he wants to run for president. And it's too late.
It's sad.
But what's hilarious also is that Romney's people are suddenly like desperately searching for allies because they, I think rightfully think that maybe Romney and Bush are the same genre of person.
He's also in the same,
Like Chris Christie is like a different type of candidate to work for, even though politically he's very similar. Mitt Romney and Jeb Bush are kind of like, how do you even know which is which?
Yeah.
They both have the same dumb hair.
Yeah.
They look roughly the same. They're about as milquetoast as you can possibly be.
Totally.
Like, that's... How do you know which of those to work for?
Yeah.
They're both losing strategies.
Yeah, but the thing about the Republican primary is that even if a reasonable person makes it out of the Republican primary, which is hard in the first place, you are still left with the problem that you have to navigate that primary. A, you have to triangulate yourself.
Right.
And B, just listening to the people who are going to be in the primary. Like, let's say Ted Cruz runs and his like main issue is immigration. Like, you've then again lost the Hispanic vote, even if Jeb Bush is the person who ends up being the, like, you just sort of like, you almost have to kill the Ted Cruzes of the world, just like secretly off them to be able to win the presidency.
Here's because who's left in the Republican Party also: crazy wing nuts. And then boring rich white men of old money extraction who in no way relate to regular American people.
Right.
That's all you've got.
Right.
They're idiots because if they had John Huntsman run for president, he would be the president.
Right.
Like, I have no... John Huntsman is like the sort of unspoken secret of the Republican Party.
Right.
He's someone who I think no one will ever consider a legitimate candidate for president and could be the president that everyone's happy with. I wouldn't be like thrilled if he was president.
You'd handle it.
I'd handle it. Yeah. I don't see a big difference between him being president and Hillary Clinton being president, you know?
Bingo.
I mean, he's someone who I think could really find common ground. So he's someone who I think could full stop be the president. And they will never have someone like him, but the only rich white men that they can navigate into this primary are people of, like, old money stodgy extraction who seem like the kind of people that try to iron a shirt while it's on them because they've never operated their own iron. That's the kind of person who is running in the non-wingnut part of the primary.
Mitt Romney.
That's documented.
That's
a thing that he did on camera.
Video of that.
Yeah. But so in any case, it's like they don't have anyone left in the party that's a normal person besides maybe, you know, they have the wingnut, the Huckabee wingnuts, who are like wingnuts but kind of lovable. But like even Huckabee has sort of lost a lot of his sheen recently because he said some things that were just too hateful.
He spent too much time on Fox News.
He spent too much time on Fox News and he's said things that have been too hateful to take back.
Yeah.
You know, he seems like such a teddy bear and he's so populist that you want to love him. But sometimes you say things you can't take back. And sorry about that, Mike Huckabee, but that's life.
Yeah.
And just as Mitt Romney couldn't take back hating 53% of Americans.
Right.
Mike Huckabee can't take back a lot of the things that he said about gays and, you know,
themselves.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Like, those are just things that can't happen.
Yeah.
So they're left with just no options.
That's it.
And then you end up
with
a Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney showdown. I mean, we have, our problem is that we have options that no one is declaring.
I know.
I mean, we have too many options and only one of them is great.
Yeah.
And we have, the rest of our options are terrible.
Yeah.
Because we really don't have options either. Liz Warren is in an unfortunate situation, I think, because Liz Warren, I don't think truly, like, in her heart, wants to be the president. I think she has no interest in being the president, rightfully so. It's a terrible job.
Yeah.
I think that she, if she does run, is going to have to do it out of a patriotic duty to just, like, have finally someone who makes some sense and represents actual people in the race. Like, she's going to have to sacrifice herself for the good of the party if she runs for president, and that's not fair to her, but what can you do?
That's right.
You can't do anything about it.
If
I could take the burden off her, I would, but I can't.
You got into politics, Liz Warren.
Yeah.
Now you're on the hook.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
Sorry.
But I mean, like, poor Liz Warren, too, because, like, she doesn't want to be the president.
Whatever, she might.
She doesn't want to be the president at all. No, because Liz Warren is a reasonable person, and no reasonable person, when you really get down to it, who has, like, reasonable goals and has, like, thoughts about power that aren't just, like, I want...
Yeah.
Wants to be the president.
Wouldn't it be fun to test out one of those people in the presidency, though?
Totally.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great to have a person who thinks about people in the presidency? But, I mean, that's, like, that's the problem that we're facing, too, is a lack of options.
That was just not a fart, by the way, if you could hear that. That was my... I don't know if you heard that.
I just
moved around on this leather stool that I'm sitting on, and it made, like, a... I figured that you would hear it, because you're always, like, hearing the audio things that are going around us, and I was like, that was really loud. But I didn't. I promise.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear it.
All right, I did. You won't ever know.
No, you can't know.
Anyway.
In any case, in other news, there was a big march in New York this week against police brutality.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything to report other than that it happened, and it went well, and there were no arrests.
Great.
And it was like one of those ones that you have in the street and kids come to and everyone's thrilled.
Keep it up, people.
Well done, you.
Yeah.
You being the plural you.
Yeah.
Then we had a great moment in Congress.
Yeah. This is a party that I would like to go to because I think this would be a fun party, by the way.
Sure.
We obviously can't get in. But there was the holiday party, which was for... The White House party for members of Congress. So, like, anybody can just go over to the White House and then have probably some cocktails and, you know, maybe...
Make some funny speeches.
Some pass appetizers, probably, I would assume. Maybe some hors d'oeuvres of some sort. Anyway,
Hobnob with Michelle Bachmann.
Michelle Bachmann, who is retiring, as you know, which is a sad state of affairs. Maybe she'll run for president.
We
can only hope. Or
she's not going to be busy.
She'll probably get a job on Fox News or something like that. She'll go to Sarah Palin. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would also...
She can't. She makes even less sense than Sarah
I would
Palin.
Also watch a reality show with her and her husband and all of her, like, 700 foster kids or whatever.
For sure.
Right?
God, that would be the greatest reality show in history.
We need to...
Pitch that to somebody.
We need to get that to... Yeah, to her.
To her.
That's what we need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't have to pitch it to anyone once we have her on board because everyone will be interested.
Yeah. Now, as you may expect, she, of course, couldn't resist having one last interaction with President Obama, and you would think maybe at the holiday party that she would tell him... You know, Merry Christmas. She would ask how his children were. Right. She had a lot of options.
Yeah.
She could have small talk. The weather. I mean, anything, really.
Anything at all.
No.
Didn't go that route.
We should just read this.
Just
because
read
this is in her own words. She was giving an interview about this interaction. She said, I turned to the president and I said something to the effect of, Mr. President, you need to bomb the Iranian nuclear facilities. Because if you don't, Iran will have a nuclear weapon on your watch and the course of world history will change.
Oh, God.
And he got his condescending smile on his face and laughed at me and said, well, Michelle, it's just not that easy. And I said to him, no, Mr. President, you're the president. It will happen on your watch and you'll have to answer to the world for this. And that was it. And then I left. Merry Christmas. So, last interaction with President Obama needed to ensure him to bomb Iran. That was
says, it. Couldn't get out of there without making that one point.
That's it. That's all she... Probably the only reason she went.
Death and destruction on the mind.
That's right. Yep.
God.
Oh, my God. What a...
What a gem.
Gem. An American...
Gem.
Know, gem.
Not yeah. hero.
That's... No. I wasn't even close, okay. close
like,
to that.
I was like, I hope he's not about to say hero.
No. Not even at all.
A comedic hero, if
yeah,
nothing else.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think she can be on Fox News because I think that she doesn't even make enough sense. Like, Sarah Palin has thoughts that she tries to express. She does not use language those thoughts. She doesn't have the words, but she is having somewhat coherent at times thoughts.
Right. Michelle Bachmann has the inverse problem, I think, actually, or the reverse problem, or whatever you want to say.
Where,
she has the words, and she's not, like, a stupid woman in the sense that, like, she doesn't know how to, I mean,
she went
to law
words.
School. I mean, like, she's, you know, she has the words.
Right. But she doesn't have the thoughts.
She doesn't have the thoughts.
No. It's maybe a Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann show.
Oh.
Would be an option.
I like that.
Where Sarah Palin has the thoughts and then Michelle Bachmann translates those thoughts into words.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. You could get some real clarity out of those
That's
two.
That's good. That's another show.
That's
we're
another
pitching.
Show. Totally.
We got two great show ideas here.
We're not lacking great ideas over at this podcast.
No. We have the great ideas and we have the words.
That's right.
That's what's so great about
us. That's what's so great about
listeners, if you were wondering, if you couldn't put your finger on it, that's what it is. Thoughts and words.
Thoughts and words. Together at last. And then final news.
Somebody who didn't have many thoughts or words, certainly not words.
No, nobody in this situation has
had the
words.
Because if you read the Sony email, there were a lot of words. A
lot of words written.
Written. Not grammar.
No.
Not good
not
grammar.
Not punctuation. No one capitalized the letter anywhere in the course of all those words.
No. But the Amy Pascal and Scott Rudin email exchange about a few different subjects is really... I told you this week because a couple weeks ago I was having guilt issues when I was watching Peter Pan
when
those protesters
were
going on. This week I was having guilt issues because I should have been reading the highlights of the CIA torture memo, and instead I was
obsessively scouring emails between Amy Pascal and Scott Rudin where they call Angelina Jolie a spoiled brat.
I have read some of these twice, and I'm not ashamed to say it because they are just such... A treat. I mean,
such a treat.
You really, if you want to know what an email exchange between two of the worst people on earth.
Yeah, if you want to know what the worst people on earth are up to with using their.
It's here.
And here's a thing that I think is the most important thing to point out about this entire situation, which we alluded to a second ago. Nobody has any grammar getting used in any of these emails. And it's highlighted specifically, and there's one leak of an email that Paul Reiser wrote. And if you don't know, Andy
Pascal runs Sony Studios, runs by
Sony.
The way.
She's the head of Sony.
She's not an idiot.
Scott Rudin, big deal in Hollywood.
Big deal.
Big producer. Scott Rudin.
Known asshole.
Known asshole, but should be able to communicate in the English language.
Yeah.
There were emails leaked by George Clooney where it's all ellipses. He doesn't use any other punctuation. It's just like weird, crazy thoughts with ellipses. And right. The email was like, the headline on that article was like, George Clooney's a genius. And I was like, not so, friends. Not
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
But none of these emails are written in real person grammar, except for one email that got leaked by Paul Reiser,
which was the most tragic one.
The saddest email about him asking if they can please try to release Mad About You on DVD.
Because only some of the seasons
only some
are.
Of the seasons
he really wants.
He really
he's,
wants.
He's heard from fans.
He's heard.
Traveling around the country.
I would tell him that. I loved Mad About You. Here's another thing I'm proud of, though. Because this is the only email leaked so far written in English.
Yeah.
Stuyvesant alum.
Oh, that's
there
right.
There it is. You told me that. A well-educated gentleman.
Yeah.
That's
right.
That's what a good education buys you, my friends. Because these jokers are not even writing in coherent word formations. It's not just the grammar that's missing.
Yeah.
It's the knowledge of what they're trying to talk about.
If you want to lose all faith in humanity,
this is it.
This is the week to do it.
This is the week to do it.
Between these emails
and the Obama comments.
And the, oh yeah, exactly. That's, well, and I think that she may ultimately lose her job, as you said, who really cares? I mean, if you're her, who cares?
Right.
Because she'll just get another job. She runs, I mean, she's a power player in the city. So, I mean, she's not going to go be homeless.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, like, there was one of the exchanges was about, like, one of them was going to a fundraiser for Obama, and they were like, oh, what do you want me to ask? And they were like, ask him if he likes 12 Years a Slave, and then just, like, started listing movies that black people were in. Like,
yeah.
I mean, come on, guys.
Like, really? Do better.
Do better.
Do better.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's still rampant speculation that North Korea is behind all of these hacks. I don't buy it.
Can't be done. No.
It's because some of the coding was done in Korean. But here's my thoughts, which I tried to explain to my office earlier, and I think they only half bought it. But if anyone in that office has experience dealing with weird closed nations, it is me. I have been to much of the communist world.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of thoughts about how they operate and their thoughts, you know, within those societies.
Yeah.
And I would argue that there is very little sort of information about what real world politics looks like circulating around North Korea, even by those of them that were educated in the outside world. I just don't think North Korea would think to hack a corporation. I think they would think to hack the U.S. government, which is an impossibility that will never happen because they're not because we couldn't be hacked, but because they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I just don't think that it would be like a North Korean type of thought to have where they'd be like, you know what we could do? Hack the movie studio that's releasing. Like, I think they love having this movie, the interview being released. It gives them something to talk about till the end of time. If they stop the release of that movie, they have lost a talking point that's going to win them lovers and admirers and other things for time to come, for years to come. I mean,
they have this movie now to point to as, like, proof of the evil
nothing,
America,
yeah,
basically.
There is
like
nothing that gives them, that brings them more in terms of credibility and power amongst their own people. That's
the
better
proof
than this.
That America is evil. At least in their eyes.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is how the whole country thinks. So, like, there is no way on earth North Korea is trying to stop the release of the interview. They want it to be released every day of every year for the next three decades. I mean, this is going to ensure them love and glory for decades to come. Like,
this is
not their plan.
Ensure their godlike status.
Exactly. And there's no way on earth that they ever thought to themselves that hacking a corporation was a plan.
Right. And as we talked last week, if their tourism site proves anything,
it's that they don't know how to operate the internet.
That's right.
They can't build a site to save
can't
their lives. Brent and I also can't really operate the internet, but we're not trying to fucking hack Sony, you know?
Couldn't do it.
I know. I'm freely admitting that we are not capable of doing that.
No.
And I would argue that we maybe are a little more tech savvy than much of North Korea.
North Korea, I think you're right.
Yeah. So in any case, that's that.
That's it.
That's the news this week.
We did it.
Mm-hmm. And now it's done. So
we'll talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye.